Ecosystems include biotic, or living factors like you and me, and abiotic, or non-living factors like water and energy. Ecosystems have many levels, which are organized from the smallest atoms to the greatest combinations of interacting components, known as the biosphere. Each level of organization is increasingly complex and depends on the interactions between their parts. The main types of interactions involve energy flow and nutrient cycles. Consider how living organisms use resources and in doing so change the form of energy and matter so other living organisms can use it. What is the primary source of energy for the Earth's ecosystems? Except in unusual places like deep sea vents, the sun is the primary source of energy. The sun drives the one-way flow of energy through a series of trophic levels that make up a food web. The first trophic level is made up of self-feeding autotrophs, known as producers, and the rest of the levels are made up of consumers, or heterotrophs. Energy flows from one trophic level to the next as primary consumers eat producers, and then secondary consumers eat primary consumers, and finally tertiary consumers eat secondary consumers. Try to come up with the examples of organisms for every trophic level on your own. As energy moves from one trophic level to the next, much of this energy is lost along the way as heat during metabolic processes such as cellular respiration. So this is an example of the first and second laws of thermodynamics. Do you remember what these are? Why are there usually no more than four trophic levels in an ecosystem? There are two things that limit the maximum number of levels in an ecosystem. One, the efficiency of energy transfer between trophic levels, and two, the amount of energy available at the first trophic level. Let's imagine a pyramid of energy with 100,000 units of energy trapped from the sun in the first trophic level by the primary producers. If the primary consumers capture 10,000 units of energy, what is the percentage of energy transferred from one trophic level to the next? Now think about this. If the minimum amount of energy necessary to support a trophic level was 100 units of energy, how many levels would there be based on the transfer efficiency you just calculated? There is one more thing to think about here. What is the relative size of each trophic level compared to the next? Unlike energy, which flows in a one-way direction through an ecosystem and is replenished by the sun, matter is finite and must be cycled between the abiotic and biotic factors. Let's begin with the three major biogeochemical cycles: water, carbon, and nitrogen. First, let's focus on water. Water is driven into the atmosphere as water vapor by evaporation and transpiration. Water then returns to the land by precipitation and runoff. Okay, now let's consider carbon. Carbon is found in various sinks such as organisms, the ocean, and rocks. Carbon is exchanged between organisms and the atmosphere through photosynthesis and respiration, as well as decomposition and combustion, where it alternates between organic molecules and carbon dioxide. Finally, there is nitrogen. The nitrogen cycle can be a little confusing. Nitrogen is the dominant gas in the atmosphere and a major limiting factor in terrestrial ecosystems, as plants and animals can't use nitrogen directly from the atmosphere. In fact, organisms like bacteria and fungi play a critical role in cycling nitrogen by putting nitrogen into a usable form for other living organisms. Do you know all the processes involved in converting and cycling nitrogen in the environment and where they happen? Let's review the major processes. First, nitrogen fixation is a process by which atmospheric nitrogen is put into a usable form, ammonia, for plants to use. Second, nitrification is the conversion of ammonia to nitrite and nitrate. Third, assimilation is when ammonia or nitrate is absorbed by plants for growth. Fourth, ammonification is when nitrate is converted back into ammonium. And fifth, denitrification is when nitrite is released back into the atmosphere as nitrogen. You can use the mnemonic "Nancy noticed apples always dent" to help you remember these processes. Okay, now stop and think about which organisms are responsible for each of these five processes. So why are cycles called biogeochemical cycles? Just look at the word biogeochemical. These cycles involve biological, geological, and chemical interactions. Can you think of biological organisms involved in each cycle? How about the geological aspects of an ecosystem that influence cycling? And what chemical processes occur in each cycle? If you understand these parts, you will definitely have your cycles down. Understanding how all of these cycles fit into an ecosystem or biosphere is not an easy task, because there are more variables than our brains can process. Fortunately for us, computers are capable of processing such large amounts of information. Data gathered by scientists from the natural systems and lab work are fed into computers that can generate models showing us all of the possible interactions between the variables that have been measured.